So I'd kind of like to start out with congrats on Woodstock Best Narrative. That's a really cool award from a film festival.
I know, it's so cool, and I was totally taken by surprise, and I didn't have a speech, and I truly was shocked and overwhelmed. It was like an out-of-body experience, and I felt like I was one of those silly, you know, people that receive an award, and I can't believe it's happening, but it was a real experience.
So I'd love to kind of dive into, before we get into these amazing performances, where did you find this church in the middle of Idaho?
That's a great question. One of my producers, Casey Mott, I had worked with him a few years earlier on his writing directing debut, and I needed his advice. I wanted a support system because I didn't know what I was doing. I needed that kind of consigliere, right, on board. And Casey, at the last minute, he lived in Los Angeles, but he got a job in Sun Valley, Idaho, where he grew up running the regional theater, the Argus. And he basically told me, look, I can't help you unless you shoot it there, but there are a ton of churches in Idaho, and there are these mountain ski crews, you know, they shoot sports videos, and they'll all be out of work before the ski season starts, and it's dirt cheap before the mountain opens. So I came out to look. Idaho also, you don't need a permit to shoot. You don't need a permit to put sticks down on the street, like a tripod. Good thing to know for filmmakers out there. So there were these benefits to shooting there. It was just a matter of finding a location. It was the last church I looked at. I was pretty tired. I wanted to stop. I wanted to give up and just say that Idaho's not going to work. And I saw this church on Google Maps, this Episcopal church, and I thought, well, I guess I have to go there because it's an Episcopalian church in the film. And I was looking at it, and the reverend saw me through the window, called me in, and gave me a little tour. And the churches I had seen in Ketchum, Idaho, the resort town, they looked like concert halls. They were just so beautiful. The architecture, the design was so stunning. You know, they were really aesthetically kind of marvelous churches. And I didn't want that. I was looking for something really modest. I wanted the story to be about four people and the effort they're making to forgive and reconcile and heal. I didn't want distractions, and I didn't want any easy way out. So I don't mean to speak disparagingly of the church. It's a lovely church, but it's lovely because of its modesty. It's lovely because of its simplicity and the sincerity to that. That it, you know, it's about prayer, it's about community, it's about helping people. That's how the church felt. And I was immediately sort of taken with it. And then the reverend listened to my story and told me, I hope you can start enjoying being a father. She's going to make me choke up. But she saw what I was going through. She sort of understood how basically scared I was about what these things happening in our country. And I just felt immediately that I knew that I had to do it. I had to do it there. So I reworked the script, you know, to write in the basement, but it was kind of perfect to have the church on top of the basement and the nave, so to speak, on top of the basement, separating the sort of secular from the divine. I really welcome the structure, the actual, you know, geography of that church was sort of perfect for the story.
Very cool. So I'm curious, you guys had only a 3-day rehearsal, I think back in 2019 for this with the four main actors. Can you talk a bit about the importance of those 3 days and how much the script was molded?
I knew we needed some kind of rehearsal because it is so much like a play, at least the conversation. You know, it's an uninterrupted 70-some-odd page conversation. I think it plays out in about 75 minutes on screen. And it's like a one-act play. And it was essential we had to have rehearsal. And the actors wanted it, too. I don't think I would have gotten that level of actor on board if we weren't going to do a rehearsal. But the key, there was two goals that we needed to accomplish. And the one was making sure the words worked. You know, actors, people need to ask them questions to fully understand the script, because they're the ones living it. They're the ones sort of living the beats and the emotional beats in the story. And if they have to phone something in, if they are faking any point, the writing should be changed. They should stay on a truthful path from the beginning to the end. And for a movie like this, it was essential because the emotions were so high and so intense, they would not be able to get there. They would not be able to give the performances they needed to if the words didn't carry them there. So we made sure the words were there, and wherever the actor had a problem or felt something was missing, I just changed it. You know, it was a sleepless 72 hours for me because I left these rehearsals and had to do rewrites late into the night. So that was one, and we did accomplish it. I think the performances speak for themselves. I think they're incredible. The other thing was you can't do this kind of work without trusting each other and without being able to be vulnerable with one another. So even though we had about 2.5 days, we knew, sort of, it was unspoken, but we all sort of knew we have to go in here and become fast friends. We have to become an ensemble. We have to become a unit. And it meant telling embarrassing stories, telling sad stories, telling funny stories, whatever it was, we had to be vulnerable. It was like a crash course in intimacy. And I wanted to sort of spearhead this, but it was actually Ann Dowd who led the way and broke the ice with a really personal story. I mean, probably 5 to 10 minutes into the first day of rehearsal. So it's a beautiful thing about actors, and what I love about acting is their need to become close. They want intimacy. They want to form an ensemble desperately. And it's this kind of lovely energy. And these four are as good as it gets, and they kind of knew that. They went right to work.
So I'm curious. I know that so much of your work with your DP, Ryan, on capturing the emotion in all of their faces, but I was amazed at all of the movement in that little room, the moments they get up, the moments they turn around. Can you talk a bit about working in that space with your DP to capture just the subtle little moments? Because it was really heartbreaking, just the movements that were going on.
Yeah, I know. Ryan's amazing. If you should try and have an opportunity to speak with him, and I've told Bleeker, the guys at Bleeker, to, you know, please get Ryan and Yang Hua, our editor, out there. But yeah, so we both loved movies like 12 Angry Men and My Dinner with Andre as something to reference. And in that, we knew we don't have to overthink this. We can make a movie in a room. My Dinner with Andre is just, you know, a handful of setups. Yeah, the 12 Angry Men, you know, it has movement. There's definitely some dynamic shots, but it's a room. Let's not overthink this. One of our mantras was sort of, let's never have the director get in the way, never be visible. Like, we don't want our choices to be visible. We want it to feel seamless. But at the same time, we wanted the camera to reflect the emotional journey of the actors. We wanted to mirror the emotional state of the characters. So we tried to develop a way of deteriorating and evolving with the emotional arc of the film. And so we started with a very basic system. We call it the system. I know it's not a very original name, but it essentially was, you know, we had two cameras, we had dollies, and we'd essentially just start with our basic two shots, depending on where the light was. You know, Ryan, you know, said we have to have windows. We're not going to fake this in a, you know, a windowless room. We want natural light. We worked with the light. We moved where the sunlight needed us to be, and we tried to keep it simple. You know, two shots, singles, mediums, and then each day we tried to introduce a new language into the system, and that would be movement, that would be pans, and then eventually we pulled the camera off the dolly into handheld. We became a handheld camera, and then at that point, we switch lenses from spherical to anamorphic lens to suggest a perspective shift, that when the characters relive the event, the world changes. Or really, it's to illustrate that when tragedy and loss happen, when something terrible happens in your life, it changes the perspective of the world. You never see the world the same way. And that's what loss can do. And so we wanted to reflect that with a perspective shift. So there was... For a movie in a room that I think feels somewhat simple, you obviously have a sort of a more keen eye about it and can you sense the camera movement and the preparation and thought that went into it. We put a lot of time and effort into developing this slow evolution of camera throughout the film.
And Scotty, we just have time for one last question.
Oh, no worries. Last question. Last question is kind of a one out there. At the near end of the movie, I don't want to give away too much, but there is a beautiful song. I believe it's by the Dallas Christian Adult Concert Choir. That really hits Jason's character. Can you talk a bit about just adding that little moment for a film that is tough to have closure? I found myself bawling at that. It was beautiful.
Thank you. Well, it was a sort of a reference to Our Town. That's what the church choir is rehearsing in Our Town, and I that's a beautiful play about what it means to be alive and how we treat one another and how important being present is and appreciating our relationships and appreciating your time on Earth. And you know, I feel like those are kind of the themes of this movie, and I wanted to make a reference to that, you know. And what's happening, I believe, with Jason, and again, I don't want to spoil anything, but each character has a different relationship with spirituality or religion. You know, there's an atheist, and then there's a character that seems to be more spiritual. They each have a sort of a different relationship, and I want the audience to walk away asking those questions about themselves. What's my relationship with spirituality? You know, if I'm not religious, do I still have a relationship with something unknown, the mysterious forces of life and the universe that we cannot explain? You know, what is my relationship with that? Because I think it's important. I think embracing the unknown leads to humility, which leads to interdependence, our need for one another. And these are the kind of themes that I want to bring to life and lift out of the movie. And I think the movie is really tough, right? It's emotionally, it's a huge experience. It's pretty formidable, I think, in how emotional it is. But I also believe life delivers these moments, whether they are crazy coincidences or moments that feel just perfect and beautiful, and they happen. You know, and maybe they can be called miracles by some people, but these things happen, and I thought this movie needed that. I thought it needed something that felt like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. You know, that's sort of undeniably beautiful or undeniably what you need in this single moment. And for his character, you know, he's someone that sort of speaks against religion. But it's this sort of moment where he's realizing maybe he's lacking a relationship with spirituality. Maybe it's something that's missing in his life. So those are kind of the ideas and thoughts around that moment.
Thank you guys so much for the chance, Fran. Thank you for the movie, brother. It was amazing.
Thanks, man. I'm sorry we couldn't talk more. I know. I really appreciate it.